Уважаемые участники конференции,
dear conference participants,
я искренне рада приветствовать вас.
I am very glad to greet you.
Вы собрались такой далекой от нашего
Евразийского материка, gathered today in Australia,
Австралии,
far away from our Eurasian continent,
темой конференции,
and you have such a wonderful topic for your conference, which is dedicated to peace. You are discussing new, unique investment projects, the new Silk Road, the land bridge. You believe there will be peace on earth, and you have dedicated your hopes and your aspirations to that goal. This is wonderful, and believe me, this is what all sane people in the world desire. I regret very much that my country, Ukraine, is not a part of this process today. In my country, there is a civil war, and my country is undergoing deliberate, sustained, and brutal destruction. You know, Ukraine, not long ago, only 25 years, was among the 10 most developed countries in the world, measured by GDP per capita. Ukraine at that time produced 2% of the world GDP. Per capita, Ukraine's GDP level was 11% above the world average. We had full employment. All our factories were operating. Ukraine had more than 360 major industrial plants. Ukraine was an advanced agro-industrial country. We had rocket-building plants, shipbuilding, aircraft, auto, and locomotive production. Ukraine has over 20% of the world's reserves of black earth soil. We had excellent harvests. Nobody went hungry. We had free education and health care. We could raise our children with full confidence in what tomorrow would bring. But the Soviet Union was destroyed. It was destroyed by the Communist Party elite, which degenerated and wanted to take over the ownership of what was actually the commonwealth of the nation. They wanted to look after only their own children and grandchildren. Ukraine has existed as an independent country for 24 years. What has that so-called independence brought to my country? Today, Ukraine's GDP represents only 0.5% of world GDP. It was 2%, now it is 0.5%. Expressed per capita, Ukraine's GDP is $4,000 per capita, as against a world average of $10,500 per capita.
Вы представляете обвал падения?
This is now 60% below the world average. We were 11% above the average level, and now we are 60% below it. 60% below it. Why is this? It is because the economic ties were broken with those factories and regions in tandem with which our economy had developed for decades. First and foremost, that means Russia, Belarus, the other former Soviet republics. In this setting, of course, there has been no improvement of life for the population. The figures tell the story. The average life expectancy in our country has fallen by 2 years during these 25 years. It was 72, now it is 70. Men in Ukraine live to an average age of 62. The population is dying out. Ukraine had a population of 52 million in 1990. Now there are 43 million left without Crimea. Ukraine has lost Crimea.
прежде всего курс реформ.
The primary reason for this is the reform policy imposed by the International Monetary Fund. This reform policy meant the privatization of state property, which passed into the hands of a new oligarchy. That oligarchy is getting along quite nicely. Their families do not suffer any poverty. The reform policy ended government regulation of export and import. Commercial banking activity proliferated, and the banking mafia began to make money on Ukraine's problems. The banking mafia, too, is not impoverished. They're living quite well. The IMF reform policy for Ukraine prescribed a cheap labor economic model. The subsistence level, the minimum wage, and pensions were artificially suppressed, and that's why the overwhelming majority of the population is impoverished. According to the Human Rights Ombudsman, in 2011, 80% of the Ukrainian population was living below the poverty line established by the United Nations for Central and Eastern Europe and the Commonwealth of Independent States countries. That is $4.30 per day in U.S. dollars. 80% of the Ukrainian population received less at that time. What about now? Let me tell you how things are now. Ukraine faced the choice of whether to integrate with Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan, the customs union, or with the European Union. What needed to be done was to weigh and analyze these different options, and they were analyzed. A special working group was set up, including specialists from the Russian Academy of Sciences, Economic Forecasting Institute, and the Ukrainian National Academy of Sciences, Economic Forecasting Institute. This working group meticulously calculated what would be more beneficial for Ukraine. Their clear answer was that integration in the East with the member countries of the customs union would be beneficial and promising and could actually save Ukraine. Their calculations showed that if Ukraine joined the customs union, it would experience an 18% increase of GDP in 10 years. This would be the highest increase of any of the customs union members. Russia would have 16.8% growth in that time period, Belarus 16.1%, Kazakhstan 14.7%. But Ukraine would have 18% GDP growth. Why? Because the barriers would be removed for Ukrainian goods to be sold in Russia, Belarus, and Kazakhstan. Prices on these products would decline and they would become more competitive because of the lower costs of bringing them to market. Furthermore, Ukraine would have received much needed investment for modernizing its industry. Do you think these were merely projections? No, indeed. Let me give you precise figures. In 2010, Viktor Yanukovych was elected president of Ukraine. His image was that he was supposedly pro-Russian and would establish close contacts with Russia. In April 2010, the Kharkov Agreement was signed, whereby Russia granted Ukraine a discount on natural gas prices. Everybody really hoped that there would be an intensive economic integration process between Russia and Ukraine. But what happened in 2010 overall? In 2010, Ukraine's trade with Russia grew by 60.7%, reaching the level of 41.9 billion United States dollars. Russian-Ukraine trade increased, and Ukraine obtained a huge market for its products. Ukrainian industrial output rose by 11% in 2010. I'm talking about industrial output, which was the core of the Ukrainian economy. This is why Ukraine's GDP rose by 4% in 2010. It was not only that gross exports to Russia rose, but the composition of Russian imports from Ukraine was 40% high-tech products and 45% products of a medium technology level. In other words, this was creating demand for a highly skilled workforce in Ukraine, so that our children, when they graduated from school, from university, there would be demand for their skills in the economy. 2010 showed that very clearly. Alas, that same year, President Yanukovych, upon taking office, decided to betray everybody. He betrayed his voters, who had believed that he would ensure economic integration with Russia. He deceived the West, where he started exporting his own fast-growing personal wealth. He started assuring the West that he would bring about Ukraine's integration into Europe. And that's why in July 2010, Yanukovych's Party of the Regions, along with the Communist Party and the Litvin bloc, who together made up a majority coalition in the parliament, voted for the euro integration of Ukraine. This was voted up by the parliament of Ukraine, but it was done against the will of our people. It was done even against the pledges made by these political forces, because neither the Party of Regions nor the Communists had run on any platform of breaking ties with Russia and pushing toward the European Union. On the contrary, our people had voted in two referendums back in 1991 to be together with Russia and Belarus and to build a new, improved alliance. But then Presidents Kravchuk, Kuchma, Yushchenko, followed by Yanukovych, trampled on what the population had voted for. Yanukovych and the Party of Regions started building up the myth that Europe wanted Ukraine and that Ukraine should move toward Europe and integrate with the EU. Meanwhile, our academic economists, whose findings about relations with Russia I already mentioned, calculated what Ukraine would get out of integration with the West. What they found, the same Ukrainian Academy Sciences Institute for National Economic Forecasting, was horrifying. In order to integrate with the EU, even just into the free trade zone mandated by an association agreement, would cost 160 billion euro to modernize the Ukrainian economy. Where would money like that come from? And when these calculations were presented to Prime Minister Azarov in the autumn of 2013 and to President Yanukovych, showing what Ukraine would get out of association with the EU, then they too started tearing their hair out over what was going to happen to the Ukrainian economy. They were late in tearing their hair out because for 3 years they had been circulating myths about the prosperity Ukraine would experience if it associated with the EU. This Europsychosis was fanned for 3 years. But when, on November 21st, 2013, the Ukrainian government decided to put the signing of the association agreement on hold, then the entire operation, which was pre-planned, prepared, and paid for by the West, and involved a quite substantial section of the Ukrainian population who had been pushing for a move toward the West, this kicked into action, and the Euromaidan protests began. On November 29, 2013, in Vilnius, Yanukovych refused to sign the association agreement with the EU. That night, November 20th to 30th, 2013, the peaceful Euromaidan ceased to be peaceful. Today, we all understand that the scenario had been pre-planned in the interests of and paid for by the United States, and it was deployed by Presidential Chief of Staff Lyovachkin. Suddenly, the law enforcement agency called Berkut used inappropriate force against the students who were protesting in the central square. Although, from what I have seen about the events in Frankfurt on March 18, 2015, law enforcement there was very tough in breaking up a rally where the demonstrators likewise had cobblestones and Molotov cocktails and were burning automobile tires. And what about Ferguson, Missouri? In the United States, demonstrators protesting the shooting of a black man were also dealt with very harshly. But in Kiev, at that time, the demonstrators grabbed clubs, chains, Molotov cocktails, and cobblestones. And then, this was December 1st, 2013, they attacked the law enforcement personnel from the Berkut Special Police Forces, who on that day were completely unarmed. They didn't even have billy clubs. Then the West, especially the United States, forbid Yanukovych to use force. They forbid it. And then on February 21st, 2014, it was the Western countries, the foreign ministers of Germany, France, and Poland, together with Yanukovych and the leaders of the opposition, Yatsenyuk, Klitschko, and Technibok, they took responsibility for signing an agreement that Yanukovych would step down and there would be a new government in Ukraine. They assumed responsibility for making it a peaceful transition. But what then unfolded in our country? Even before February 20th, there were weapons present on the Maidan. There were shootings of both demonstrators and the Berkut by mysterious snipers whose identity has not been established to this day. Thus, the Heavenly Hundred shooting victims came about. And what came next in Ukraine? Did the Western countries not see during the winter of 2014 that Nazis had taken charge of the Euromaidan in Kiev? These were parties and political forces who openly preach Nazi ideology. They don't hide it, proclaiming Ukraine above all. Ukraine for the Ukrainians. They used Banderite slogans. And Stepan Bandera, I remind you, was an agent of Hitler's military intelligence, the Abwehr. He collaborated with the Nazis, organizing his people to lend a hand to Hitler. And at the Nuremberg International Military Tribunals at the end of the war, when the German fascists were put on trial, their helpers were also convicted. Article 6 of the Charter of the Nuremberg Tribunal said that the accomplices should be convicted and punished. But in this case, the followers of Bandera and Shukevich came with their black and red pro-Nazi flags and their swastikas, either the Nazi swastika outright or the Wulfsangel, another Nazi symbol, and with portraits of Bandera, Konovalets, Shukevich, who were all Abwehr agents, and under the slogan calling to knife the Moskali, which is a derogatory Ukrainian term for you Russians, and hang the communists, these were the slogans they marched with on the Maidan. These symbols could be seen not only in Kiev, but before the coup and after it, they spread throughout Ukraine. And the Western countries did not notice them. From February 23rd to March 5th of 2013, our delegation of leading representatives of Ukrainian leftist parties was able to tour Europe, visiting France, Germany, and Italy. This was organized by our colleagues from the LaRouche movement, and I am very grateful for their giving us the opportunity to hold dozens of meetings, press conferences, and interviews. Thanks to members of the European parliament from the Italian party, the Northern League, I was able, February 26, 2013, to hold a press conference at the European Parliament, and already at that time, we explained what was happening in Ukraine. We warned already then about the threat of civil war and the disintegration of the country, which could lead to World War III. At that time, I called on Berlin, Moscow, and Paris to unite efforts, specifically these three centers, Berlin, Moscow, Paris, to unite their efforts and prevent the Nazis from taking over in Ukraine, to help institute a ban on all neo-Nazi parties and movements in Ukraine. If this had been done at that time, the subsequent horrors in Ukraine would not have come to pass, when dozens of people were burned alive in the trade union building in Odessa on May 2, 2014, when a peaceful May 9th demonstration in Mariupol was fired upon, when Crimea, upon seeing this Nazi coup, made its exit from Ukraine, when the Donbas region in eastern Ukraine rose up, and blood is still flowing there. To this day, there are up to 50,000 dead, hundreds of thousands crippled, and 2 million refugees, including those who have left the country for political reasons. It is no small price what has been paid for the anti-constitutional neo-Nazi coup in Ukraine. This is a tragedy for the whole nation. It's not only the Donbas that is suffering. Ukraine as a whole has been sapped of its strength. In 2014, Ukrainian GDP fell by 7%. Industrial output fell by 10.7% in 2014. And in the month of January 2015 alone, industrial output dropped by another 21%. The national currency has been devalued by 2/3. Ukraine's gold and foreign currency reserves today are only $5.5 billion. 1 year ago, they had been $24 billion. There is not even enough to cover 3 months of imports, which is the standard minimum level. For Ukraine, that's $9 billion, but the country does not have reserves to cover such imports. Meanwhile, Ukraine is begging for the latest pittance from the IMF. On March 11th, they decided to lend $17.5 billion US dollars to Ukraine, but not all at once, rather over 3 years. In 2015, there will be $5 billion, which was done already on March 13th, and another $5 billion at the end of the year, a total of $10 billion. But Ukraine has foreign debt payments in 2015 of $11 billion U.S. dollars. So the IMF loan is not enough to meet the debt payments, not even to meet the debt payments. And what are the terms of the loan? They are absolutely monstrous. Ukraine ended 2014 with the largest natural population decline in the world. We have the second worst mortality rate in the world. But for natural population growth, defined as the difference between the death rate and the birth rate, we have the worst rate of decline in the world. And that was for last year. What will happen this year under the IMF's draconian conditionalities? Think about it. In order to obtain these miserable billions of dollars, the Yatsenyuk government, the Ukrainian parliament, and the president of Ukraine agreed to a brutal hike in residential utilities rates. Natural gas prices will be increased 3.3-fold. Electricity will become 3.5 times more expensive. Home heating costs are to rise 72% this year, hot water 55%, cold water 15%. How are people supposed to pay? I would like you to understand what the minimum subsistence level of income in Ukraine is for wages and pensions as established by law. These levels were established in December 2013 for the 2014 government budget, which assumed that they would be indexed for inflation, that is, increased. But the new government did not do anything of the kind. They did not index the payments, although inflation in 2014 was 24.9%, the highest rate of inflation in the world. So the subsistence minimum income for a person established for Ukraine in 2013 and still in effect was, at that time, equivalent to 152 United States dollars per month for one person. But with the devaluation of the national currency by two-thirds since then, the subsistence minimum is now equivalent to 49 U.S. dollars per month. The minimum monthly wage is $51. The minimum pension is $40. That is what the state budget provides per month for a pensioner, 40 U.S. dollars. The average monthly pension in Ukraine is the equivalent of 60 U.S. dollars. In addition, part of the IMF package is that pensions will now be subject to a tax to fund defense spending. The length of a time a person has to have worked at a heavy labor job to qualify for a pension has been increased by 5 years. The seniority level for professionals before they receive a pension has been increased. What a blow against our pensioners. And I realize what a burden they are for the IMF. We have 14 million pensioners, one-third of the population. The IMF is looking forward to Ukraine's pensioners dying off as fast as possible. And not just pensioners, working people too. Look at the wages. The average hourly wage in Ukraine today is 0.2 euros an hour. That is 20 euro cents an hour. The average wage in the EU is 23 euros an hour. Can this even be called a wage? This is why our people get sick and they are dying. Food prices are rising so much that people cannot eat properly. On top of that comes the planned rate hikes for residential utilities. The IMF demanded cuts in spending on education. The number of institutions of higher learning in Ukraine is being slashed by 60%. The number of schools is being cut by 5%, just 5%. The IMF demanded an end to subsidies for the agro-industrial sector. How are our farmers supposed to survive? How can they plant the crops? The calculation is that they'll be forced to sell their land. The Ministry of Agriculture is putting three-quarters of the farm businesses in Ukraine up for privatization. And they'll be bought up by DuPont, Monsanto, and the like, on the cheap so that they can grow their genetically modified crops there and flood Europe and the world with them. This is what is being done to Ukraine. War, death, hunger, and poverty. What will Europe get out of this? What does Europe stand to gain? Do Europeans really not understand that the flames of war may flare up even more now? And then the seemingly local war in Ukraine will lead to a world war, to a conflict with Russia. Why do this? I hope very much that peaceful initiatives will prevail. I hope very much that this nightmare in Ukraine can be stopped and that Ukraine will be able to use its tremendous potential, its intellectual, industrial, and scientific capabilities. They still exist. The people are still alive. I hope that Ukraine can turn to building things and together with Russia and Europe and China build new land bridges and the new Silk Road and the program to develop the moon and so on and so forth. That is what I would like to wish for my country and for all mankind. In conclusion, I would like to say something because I am not there physically with you in Australia, but someone is there who looks a lot like me and therefore has been called my sister, Gabrielle Pewitt. And I would like to say to her,
My dear Gabby, I am glad to address you. I believe we will meet each other many times in future. Я верю в это.
I believe that.